Hello, Dark Valley listeners. This is Jennifer Amell bringing you part two of my epic conversation with Jane Borowski and her co-hosts on Invisible Tears, Amanda and Drew Bedard. If you haven't listened to part one, I suggest going back to listen to that first, because otherwise you'll be a little confused. In this second and final part, Jane and Amanda tell us how they banded together with other New Hampshire families of the missing and murdered to stage a demonstration in front of the Attorney General's office. We get the most up-to-date information on Jane's case, and you'll get to hear our favorite behind-the-scenes moments from the production of Dark Valley. Additionally, we are trying to raise money for Bernice Cordemache's headstone. You can go to the links in the show notes, you can donate via GoFundMe, or we're also auctioning off a painting by none other than my own mother, Pamela Robinson, who coincidentally also designed the logo for Dark Valley. So we're opening bids on November 1st and closing them November 8th, culminating in a virtual live broadcast with myself, with Jane, with Amanda, with Drew, and with Crawlspace Media's Tim Pilleri and Lance Reinsterna. That's going to be on November 8th on Crawlspace Podcast's YouTube channel, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And last note, if you have not listened to Invisible Tears, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. If you love Jane, go on over and give them a 5-star review. All right, I hope you enjoy. We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Well, what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field. And we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening. Now, back to the show. So, Jane, talking about like good things that have come out of this process of us all getting to know each other and being introduced to other people, other victims, family members, can you tell me what you helped create this year?
Oh, my gosh.
And Amanda and Drew.
Amanda and I went to Maura Maury's vigil back in April, was it?
February.
February. We were invited by Julie. Felt very honored to be there. So we went to the vigil and the three of us started talking and Fred. And we decided that, you know what, we need to make some noise up at the AG office because we felt like we were being treated the same way. I was being treated the same way as Maura's family was lack of communication and just no return phone calls or just being brushed off and felt like that our cases really weren't being looked at. Maura's case wasn't moving forward. So we got together and I decided to contact Trish Haynes' family. Trish Haynes was murdered 5 years ago and everybody knows who killed her, but the two people that killed her, they still have not been charged for her murder yet, which is baffling to us. So me and Amanda contacted Trish Haynes, advocates, her aunt and her advocate, Chloe. And we formed this coalition and decided we were going to do this march up to the AG office to let them know that, you know, this is not okay. There's procedures that needed to be changed. We all had our own individual complaints. about the AG office. We formed this coalition and we had this big march in August up to the AG office and in New Hampshire, in Concord, New Hampshire. And oh my God, it was huge. We expected supporters to come out to support us, but what we ended up seeing was several other family members of murdered, missing and murdered victims that were unsolved, victims cases that were unsolved back 20, 30 years ago. These families were there holding their loved ones' pictures, and a few of them got up to the podium and spoke, and it was amazing. The outpour of support, and also the others that had shown up to share their anger and their concerns and how they felt like their loved one was being forgotten, that they felt like the cold case unit and the AG's office could do more. And it was amazing. It was like so amazing. I couldn't believe the amount of people that were there and who was there. You know, most importantly, who was there. Didn't realize that we were going to connect so many other people that had the same grievances as ours. It was very emotional for me. Poor Andrew. I'm standing beside Andrew, and like the whole time that we got there and we got set up, and it was just like I was talking to this person and this person and this person, and I was talking to so many people. And me and Andrew were standing there, and all of a sudden I just looked up and I saw like this whole half moon of people standing, you know, around us holding their loved ones' pictures. And it hit me like a brick wall. Holy crap. And I, poor Andrew standing there, and I just broke down and lost it. And I had a real emotional moment. And I was like, oh my God, Andrew, look what we did. Look what we did. And it was just, it was incredible. It's all I can say.
Yep. The line you said when you started, when you broke down, you just went, I thought I was the only one. And that was when it really hit home with, you are not the only one that's been through this. Everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That is what I said. I thought I was the only one. And I wasn't the only one that had a grievance or felt like I was being forgotten, or the Connecticut River Valley cases for that fact were forgotten.
That's amazing. You could really feel the energy there too. I mean, it had this very, and I don't know if this is a weird word to describe it, but like a very feminine energy. It was like very comforting, supportive, like encompassing, like supporting each other.
Oh, there was some yelling and there was some, people were definitely expressing their frustration for good reason. The things that they were saying, they had every right to say, and I'm sure they've wanted to say a lot of those things for a lot of years and just didn't know. And we got so many thank yous for putting that together. You know, people were like, finally, somebody, you know, this was something like this was brought to their attention, and it needed to be. The cold case unit needs improvement, and the advocacy program up at the AG office in Concord is broke. But I got some updates.
Yes, please let me know. I don't even know this.
Well, shortly after the march, a state trooper, which is a detective from Keene, New Hampshire, contacted me, Troop C. He said, I want to schedule a meeting. Well, that was after you had contacted him too a couple of times and said, you know, you owe Jane a meeting. It was shortly after that he contacted me. I think it was September. Like, it was only a few weeks. And scheduled a meeting with me and my daughter at the barracks in Keene. And there was another gentleman there with him. And it was great. It was a 2-hour meeting. I'm not going to say too much about this. It's kind of, you know, there is a person of interest My case is being actively investigated. There is a person of interest. Officer McLaughlin gets kind of excited about talking about some of this stuff with this person. Again, I'm like listening with an open mind, you know, got to show me proof. I need rock solid proof. And he's working on it. But he assured me that, you know, I wasn't forgotten. He's actually been looking at my case for the past 5 years, off and on. Now, I gotta also say that he's not actively working on my case full time. He does as time allows him to, but he's come up with a lot of stuff. He has done his, I mean, this man has not just gone online and Googled stuff. He has physically gone in two places to investigate certain things about this individual. So that was really impressive to me. You know, he's doing the footwork. It was a great, great meeting. I mean, me and Jessica walked out and we just both looked at each other, both simultaneously. We're like, wow, what a meeting. It was really good. He gave me his card, gave me his cell phone number. He's like, the only thing I ask is don't call me after 10 o'clock at night or my wife will beat the crap out of me. And so,
Sergeant McLaughlin, are you in an abusive relationship?
Yeah. But I have access to him anytime I want. Anytime I want to ask a question, I can message him. I can email him. I can call him. I have all access to him. He definitely gets back to me. It was a very good meeting. I hadn't felt that good about them investigating my case in a long time, long time. And then out of the clear blue, Miles Mattson from the AG office up in Concord calls me the other day. Wanted to know how things were going. Wanted to know, you know, I obviously told him that I had the meeting with Officer McLaughlin. Told him that went, I was very pleased with the way that went. He was happy about that. I said, okay, the advocacy part of me is going to come out. I want to know, have you been meeting with other families? I want to know that other families have been contacted. They have been scheduling meetings with them. And he has had several meetings with several families.
Great.
And he has several more meetings set up with families in the next 2 months or 3 months. The communication, he believes, has improved. They've been trying to be very vigilant with responding to emails more quickly. If somebody calls and they leave a voicemail, they've been making phone calls back fairly quickly. They've been answering questions. That was really good. I asked about the advocates in the office. He said right now, everybody that has come in, they have offered everybody an advocate. Some people have refused, which is fine. They just prefer to contact the AG office directly. They're aware of those families that do not want to go through the advocate, and they're fine with that. So they know who they are so that they can, you know, if they try to contact them directly, they get right back to them. The AG office does, not an advocate. So that was really good to hear. I was very pleased with that. Although I did inform him that, you know, we're going to be on top of that. And I can't believe that, you know, things had changed that quickly in the at least in the advocate part of the office. And I did say, you know, I'm sure things are still going to be improving with the advocacy program. And he assured me that they're working on it. And I also, somebody's listening to our podcast up there. Cause I said, well, I went to a crime con convention and he says, I heard. And so that was,
yeah, released our panel. I said I released our panel too.
Did you? So I said, you know, we did an enormous amount of conversation about with others about genealogy, DNA. And I said, I want to make sure, you know, are you guys using this? Are you guys keeping it up to date with forensics? Are you guys going into older cases and trying to use this? And he actually said to me, he says, yes. And before I could even say, you know, can't use the excuse with, you know, no funding or anything, he said that they've actually received grant money for this.
Recently?
I don't know recently.
Didn't he tell you, Jane, it was for 2 years they've been doing this? So it had to have been that timing.
Yeah, if you call that recent, yeah. In the past couple of years. Yeah, he said in the past couple of years, they have been receiving funding, some kind of grant money for this, for the testing. So I was like, wow, okay, that's awesome. So I assured him that he will see us again up there. And, you know, he kind of made me cry because he was like, before we ended our conversation, he said, Jane, I cannot say it without crying. He said, Jane, I just want to reassure you, we listened and we heard you guys up there loud and clear.
It's been a long journey to hear those words.
It has been. You know, and he was one of the ones that stood outside the whole flipping day and listened to everybody. He listened to everybody. He gave everybody time to speak with him. He even had some, I mean, people were hot and they were expressing, you know, their anger. And there was some yelling towards him. But he realized that, you know, these people want to be heard and I'm going to stand here and I'm going to hear them for the whole day. And he was there the whole day. That meant a lot, you know, that meant a lot.
If anybody's wondering who Miles Mattson actually is, he is the Chief Criminal Justice Bureau Senior Assistant Attorney General up in Concord, New Hampshire. And so in preparation for our event in our March that we scheduled in August, I had reached out directly to Attorney General John Formella's office and had actually been redirected to Miles himself. Before the event, Miles and I actually had a very good phone conversation. Before the event, all I wanted to do was simply introduce our coalition to him, make him understand what was being formed and why and who the individuals were. I sort of took the reins on doing that communication into the AG office because I knew I had the least known name up there between all of the people within our group. I thought I might get a little bit further and actually be able to have conversations. And luckily I was able to. Long story short, so Miles himself and also the Department of Justice Director of Communications, Michael Garrity, ended up showing up to our event. We weren't positive that they were going to, but they did. Right at the beginning of the event and actually introduced themselves and not only attended the entire event and listened to everyone, they spoke with everyone that wanted to speak with them afterwards, which we really, really appreciated.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, like you guys weren't trying to draw blood from a stone. You weren't saying like solve our cases already because, you know, that's hard stuff. What you were asking for was communication.
Yes.
And, you know, the programming that they promised by law.
Yep. Show us some humility and some compassion, knowing that, you know, these were families of loved ones that have been missing or murdered. That's all that we were all asking for, you know?
Yeah. And just, you know, watching this whole thing play out, Miles Mattson and who's the other guy? Garrity?
Yep. Michael Garrity.
They both stood there with such decorum. And then, you know, people were angry. They did have, you know, choice words for the AG, rightfully so. And they didn't yell back. They didn't get angry. They just absorbed it like consummate professionals and then followed up like you said.
Yeah, they didn't leave. They didn't walk away. And
yeah, the only one that got defensive was the local reporter.
Yeah, what outfit was he with?
Concord Monitor.
Concord Monitor, yeah. Oh, what a douchebag. Pardon my German.
He was a douchebag, and I will never do another interview with him again, ever.
But yeah, how dare that guy speak to victims the way he was? Like, that ire should have been reserved for the AG.
Stand right there and argue. Like, who are you?
Yeah, I forget who said it. It was like, this isn't your show. This is not about you.
Yeah, and there was quite a few other reporters were like telling him to shut up. How did you feel about that, the march?
Are you asking me?
I am. You were there. Yes, you and Tim and Lance.
Yeah, me and Tim and Lance, Crawl Space Media, were there to help you guys document it. Because I know, Drew, you are putting a project together. I don't know if you've announced anything.
Not still a work in progress. But yep, but we, between our two teams, we, you know, gathered a lot of great footage. And
yeah, I mean, the energy was palpable. I didn't want to like get involved too much. Julie Murray and I have spoken a lot over, you know, the last few months. And that was actually the first time that we met in person. So it's really nice to meet her in person and get to meet, you know, her brother. Oh, I want to mention Heidi Martin's best friend attended kind of like sneakily. She's just there to show her support for you, Jane. But yeah, I mean, it came away thinking like, oh my goodness, the power in numbers and to know that you have support can create real change. And I was watching it unfold and I just couldn't be prouder of you all.
Oh, thank you, Jen.
Thank you. And for any listeners that do actually want to see the rally that we're talking about, you can actually find it on Invisible Tears YouTube channel. We did put out the entire speaking engagement out there in full.
Yeah, actually, all the podium remarks are out there. So
we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Thank you for listening. Now, back to the show. Speaking of advocacy, another thing that we've been discussing for so long, and even I think talked about in Dark Valley proper, I know you guys mentioned it in Invisible Tears, but just as a little bit of background, myself, Jane, and Amanda went to go pay our respects at as many graves of victims as we could find and travel to in due time. And we went to Bernice Cordemache's grave. She was only 17 when she was abducted and murdered. And when we got there, it was quite shocking, quite saddening that she didn't have a gravestone. She didn't have a permanent marker. It was just this plastic piece in the ground. It was overgrown. It just looked like she hadn't been visited in a while. And Jane, I'd love for you to sort of talk about your reaction to.
I think my first reaction was shock. And my second reaction was pissed off. And then it was sad. It was so sad for her. You know, this was a girl that was 17 years old, murdered in the 80s. In a small community back then, obviously her family did not have a whole lot of money. They still had to pay for her funeral. But what was shocking to me is that a community small like that didn't come together and buy her a stone, a marker, a plate, anything, like anything. It was like she was put in the ground and just forgotten by the community. It was sad, but yet I was so angry about it, like so angry. And we had some conversations sitting there, and we actually drove over on the other side of the cemetery because I couldn't look at it anymore. You know, I expected to go there, pay my respects to her, talk to her a little bit, you know, and feel a little bit of you know, peace or something. And I left that place pissed off and angry and disappointed. And by no means do I Is any of this directed to her family? By no means. I think it was more towards the community. So we had talked about this for quite a while, about raising money and getting Bernice a stone. And so my daughter and I went to the stone place in Newport a few months ago, just before Crime Con. We had him make up a mock-up of the stone. He gave us a price, and we're going to try to raise the money for her stone. I've had a lot of people, after they listened to that episode, say, where can we donate? What can we do to help? I want to help get her a stone too. So, Jen, I'll let you take it from there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So we all, you know, have been talking about this for a while. We would love to get her that proper stone. I think it's going to read her name, date of birth, date of death, and never forgotten.
Never forgotten. And it's going to have two little butterflies on the corners, top corners. It's not a large stone, but it's a good size stone. The stone is, all set and everything, $2,500.
Yes. Okay. So we need your help, listeners, and we're going to blast this out on social media. Hopefully you guys will say something on Invisible Tears or on your socials. So we are raising money where we need to raise that $2,500. So the way I organized this is that there are two ways to give to this cause. For one of them, I have a GoFundMe page, which I'll link in the show notes, where you can donate anything you're able to. And then there's another way to donate, which I think is exciting, or at least it is for me. But my mother is a painter and an artist. She actually designed the logo that you're probably looking at right now on your phones, that logo for Dark Valley with the butterflies coming out.
And Invisible Tears.
And Invisible Tears. Oh, yeah, I forgot. She's been a busy bee. But she is a fine artist. And she has done this mixed media painting inspired by your story, Jane, Bernice's story, and the stories of the other women affected by the Connecticut River Valley cases. It was not a plan of hers. And she was listening to Dark Valley. And this is the painting she made. It was unconscious. It just kind of came out of her. And she's like, look what I made. I made a painting based on these people. Because she felt close to you in some way. So it's a beautiful piece. It's an abstract mixed media, which means like there's paint, there's India ink, there's pieces of magazines that are torn out. I think it's a really cool piece that people will be would maybe love to have in their homes, a little piece of, you know, all of our hearts in this piece of art. But so we are holding an auction to bid on this painting. The highest bid will win the painting. We'll cover any kind of shipping costs. But that auction is going to be open from November 1st in the morning to November 8th at 10 p.m. It closes. Again, that's open from November 1st to November 8th. At 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then along with that, we decided that we're going to host a virtual live via our Crawl Space Media YouTube channel, where we're just going to have like everybody gather who wants to like be in the same space. Of course, you all are invited to participate. Tim will be there. Lance will be there from Crawl Space Media. And we want to see the last, I guess, kind of hour or so of this auction take off and get to celebrate with everybody. It's like, did we meet our goal to get this headstone? So that is going to be on November 8th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And that will be on the Crawl Space Podcast YouTube channel. November 8th, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. We'll put all this stuff in the show notes. It's also going to be on darkvalleyshow.com. I hope people participate.
Yeah, and we'll put it on our Facebook page and make sure it gets out there so everybody knows about it.
Amazing. Thank you, guys. All right. Any closing remarks?
I just got to say, Jen, you just, the way that you made Dark Valley so victim focused was so appreciated. And the way you told their stories, and you did it with such compassion. And never mind the journal, the investigative journalism aspect of it all. Just absolutely amazing. You are so talented. And I was so glad. I'm so happy and glad that I was, and honored that I was able to be a part of this project with you. We'll never forget it. We forgot to talk about the one part of the whole our journey together up to Claremont that we forgot to, that was most memorable.
Yes. Okay. Favorite memory, or most memorable, I guess, is a better way to put it, at a production. What is that moment?
Go ahead, Amanda. You were there.
The creepy private road that we were driving on, that was posted repeatedly with "smile, you're on camera." It was when we were attempting to find where Bernice was found. And then when we ended up at the end of the road and saw signs riddled with bullets, and heard warning shots, I just remember thinking, we were, you know, obviously we were out there, we were doing field work, and we were attempting to capture media. While we were on one side of capturing media, all I thought to myself was, we are actually going to become another case in a story while we're in this process. And that was something I didn't expect. It was very exciting.
I was like, what kind of production am I running here, where I take the only survivor and her best friend into the woods? Oh, I'm so sorry.
That was the most memorable for me. But I think my favorite part was when we were standing at the bridge where we believe that Ellen Freed was found, and those butterflies flying around us.
Yes, that was really
That powerful. Was just so, yeah, it really was. They just kept flying around us.
Yeah, that wasn't a production trick at all. That happened in real time.
Yeah, it did. How about you?
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about that was like really powerful and maybe eerie at the same time is when, Jane, you and I went to Heidi Martin's grave.
Wow.
To pay our respects. We parked there and we're like, oh my God, this graveyard, this cemetery is humongous. It's going to take us 9 years to find Heidi's gravestone. And I was like, all right, Jane, like, you and I should split up. You take that side, I take this side. And like, maybe 5 minutes.
Oh, not even
well, enough for us to get pretty far apart, because you had went in the opposite direction, like down a hill or whatever. Or started yelling. I think maybe you were trying to call me, but I didn't have my phone with me.
Yeah. Yep, I did.
Tell me what happened.
I came around the corner, and then the cemetery went up a hill, a big hill, like a drivable hill. There was actually roads that drive up the hill. And I looked and I was like, oh my God, there's so many. And I just kept walking and I'm like, Heidi, will you please help me find you? And for some reason, I just shot across this one part of the cemetery. And all of a sudden, all I saw was a big stone that said Heidi Martin. It was like, I didn't even see any other stone. It was like, she brought me right to her stone within 2 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that. It was crazy. And she was like almost to the top of that hill. And I just was like, oh my God. Jen. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. Yeah, that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, and it was powerful standing at her grave and like thinking of her. And it was like a movie, like this like murder of crows flew, or like caw-caw, caw-caw.
It was snow on the ground.
Yeah. It was a really powerful experience. That was a good memory of mine. Yeah, so many good moments, though. I mean, I loved you inviting me to your home and getting to meet your husband and your daughter and your granddaughter.
That was
having
fun.
Having some beers and pizza. That was really cool.
Yeah, that was fun. Or how about when we went to the library and the guy gave us that book?
That was cool, too. Yeah, like, oh, that'll save us some time. And we're still there for like 3 hours.
I was like, holy crap. That thing was amazing. There was so many good times and good moments, memorable moments. I'll never forget. It was a weekend cram-packed of stuff that I've wanted to do for years. I never did. And I'm so glad I was able to do it with you and Amanda, my two favorites, with doing this project. I just, I'm so grateful that I was able to do it with you guys.
Me too. Literally could not have done this without you both. Jane, Amanda, Drew, I love you guys so much. Thank you for joining me today.
We love you.
Oh, we love you too.
And thank you. And we're so proud of you.